The following message was given at Grace Community Church in Minden, Nevada.
Yeah, so there's a sort of just a mystical element, we might call it, any other idea?
I had someone who asked them why they were ministered. They said someone prophesied over them.
Okay. That would be a really good example of sort of a mystical approach. Somebody, you know, prophesied over me. Or let's say even sort of less charismatic and say, you know, my mom always told me you're going to be a preacher one day, right? Something like that. Then there's another extreme, and that is sort of irrationalism. And I want to say this very clearly. There are a number of Reformed guys right now who are denying a special call to the ministry and looking at the call just rationalistically, right? So a very rational approach would be basically like a career choice in a sense, right? I think that I have the ability to do this. I think I can pursue the education needed to do this. I like to do this or whatever, and just kind of put it in terms of just sort of a rationalistic approach where they just look at the call to the ministry as nothing other than just some sort of rational choice that they make, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't want to go into too much detail, but I will say that the rationalism connected with the call is also connected with a larger commitment to rationalism in theology. Okay. So there is a move back towards a medieval scholasticism, which was very rationalistic. Okay. Which I think actually hurt the church, is what the reformers reacted against in many ways. And I think some of the interest in reviving that has spilled over to the idea of the call to the ministry. Okay. So we want to avoid both extremes, right? You don't want to go into the ministry just because your mama told you you were going to be a preacher one day. And you don't want to go into the ministry simply because you have a choice. Should I work for IBM or be a pastor? All right. There are biblical distinctions in the call to the ministry. There's an extraordinary call and an ordinary call. Extraordinary call would be the call to a prophetic or apostolic ministry. So guess what you're never going to have in your life? You're never going to have an extraordinary call to an extraordinary office. You're not going to be called to be an apostle or a prophet, trust me. The thing that made this extraordinary, of course, was that it came supernaturally by direct revelation. Okay? Whether it's Isaiah chapter 6 or Jeremiah chapter 1 or Ezekiel chapter 1 or Acts chapter 9. Or Matthew chapter 4, right? Follow me, I'll make you fishers of men. This was an extraordinary call to an extraordinary office or ministry that is really restricted to the apostolic era or the age of... Now, there are, of course, principles that you can derive, okay? But don't expect your call to be like Isaiah's or the Apostle Paul's. Okay? If you want to get on a horse and ride to Damascus and take your chances, go right for it. All right? But these don't provide a pattern for us today. But what we look at is an ordinary call. Ordinary call has two manifestations, just like the general call and the effectual call. When we talk about general and effectual call, what do we talk about when we say general call? Okay, yeah, just repent, believe, say to the whole group, right? Special call is?
Irresistible.
It's effectual, it's special, it's, right? I would say that there's a parallel when it comes to the call to the ministry, and that is, so every Christian is called to be a witness for Christ. Every Christian is called to share the gospel. Every Christian is called to support missions. Every Christian has a calling in that sense of propagating the gospel. But I would say that there's a special call to gospel ministry that we should think of primarily in terms of pastoral work, preaching, and missions. And although this is, in a sense, an ordinary call to ordinary ministry, it is still a supernatural call that requires wisdom in determining whether you're called. Okay? So think of it this way. The special call to the ministry is an ordinary call, but it is still a supernatural call, but it requires wisdom to determine if you're called. Okay? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
All right? So, what are the prerequisites to the call? The first is humility. Which, of course, by the way, the one prerequisite is that you're male. All right? So if you're a female, you're not in this class. Right? But if you're female, you don't have a call to the pastoral ministry. All right? First, so prerequisite number one. But there's the other prerequisite is the idea of humility. Now, how do young men excel in the virtue of humility? Let's just say that humility among young men is not a typically a strong suit. Right? Okay. Typically, young men are filled with pride, arrogance, hubris, all of that. Why is humility a prerequisite? Well, William Plummer, in the Scripture Doctrine of the Call to the Ministry, says humility, producing candor and a willingness to estimate according to truth one's deficiencies and qualification, is also indispensable. In this inquiry, Pope self is one of the most important items. He who is entirely ignorant of his faults and deficiencies, his attainments and abilities, cannot judge intelligently or satisfactorily. Right? So where does humility come in terms of a prerequisite for determining a call to the ministry? Well, you have to have actually a sober, humble self-assessment. Okay? Now, humility is not just thinking low of yourself. Well, I'm such a worm, I could never be a pastor. The idea of genuine humility is not to think more highly of yourself than you ought, nor to think, in a sense, more, or to think lower of yourself than is warranted. Okay? So, if you're going to determine a call, humility is absolutely crucial. Why? Because you have to be able to assess yourself in a satisfactory way, right? So he says, you know, Pope self. Well, Pope self, the imagery there is pretty plain, right? Pope self. Pope self thinks pretty highly of himself and of his own attainments and of his own gifts. And so let me just say that if you have an inkling that you're the greatest preacher that has ever lived, you don't have the prerequisite humility to enter into the ministry. Okay? All right. Second reason humility is so important and a prerequisite is because humility requires submission. Submission to biblical eldership in a solid congregation. By the way, every single call to the ministry, let me say this. Generally, almost without exception, the call to the ministry takes place within the context of a local church. Okay? So what that means is submission to counsel and direction is necessary, because if it takes place within a local church, what you're looking to is the congregation and the leadership to help you discern that. We've had instances where we believed that a person did not have the requisite gift or character, most importantly, to pursue ministry. When the person approached us, they said, "I will not pursue this without your blessing." And when we sat down and said, "We don't see at this point," we're not saying we would never see it, but at this point we don't see it. So we would counsel you to wait. The very next week, he says, "Well, my truck is packed and I'm heading towards off to seminary." Well, what happened to not doing this without the blessing? Well, I know that I'm called. Okay. Well, I just want to tell you that was over 10 years ago. That man is not in ministry today, even though he has an MDiv. All right. What was lacking?
Humility.
Yeah, just a simple, just being submissive, not looking at these guys as if they're out to get me and to thwart my life, but just them giving honest input into what they see, right? And so that is a prerequisite. Then also a genuine walk with God. A lot of the old-timers will talk about how personal piety is a prerequisite for Christian ministry. You don't see that very much, emphasized very much today, but the old timers emphasize it all the time. And the reason was summarized by Robert Murray McShane: a holy minister is an awesome weapon in the hand of God. Right? So the idea of having a life that is a reflection of the gospel, having a life that is reflective of pursuing holiness, having a life that is committed to obedience to Christ, right? And that should be a prerequisite. It's not as if, though, what is in view is perfection. There could be areas of growth, but the very fact that you might see areas of growth that are necessary in your life, that too is a reflection of a good walk with God, right? So those are some prerequisites. Anybody think of any others that you might want to, as you're thinking as a churchman involved in a local church, what might some other reasonable prerequisites be?
I think this goes hand in hand with what you said, but maybe a life that proves, usually when you guys are bringing somebody into the ministry, you check with the people they work with and their wives.
Okay.
Their wife.
Yeah, their wives, yeah. And if you don't like the answer of the first one, just ask the second one. Sure, sure.
And then you guys ask the congregation, hey, is this person straight up? Or?
Yeah, do they have a good testimony, right? Do they walk their talk? Absolutely. Absolutely crucial. Yeah, Robert.
Maybe what others see in you. I mean, people come to me and tell me, like for the abortion bill, I'm leading this thing, and that's kind of why I'm here. If I'm the leader and you're telling me I'm leading this whether I like it or not, I need to find out what that is and what that means.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So people seeing, right? I want to add one that is, we'll touch on it in a second, but it really should be under prerequisite, and that is you're actively engaged in doing something for the spiritual good of other people. Okay. So you're doing the work already somehow. Okay. You don't want a pew potato who all of a sudden feels an itch to preach, who has never done anything, right? Spurgeon actually wouldn't even accept. Now, I think Spurgeon errs in terms of his understanding of the call, errs on the side of mysticism, okay? R.L. Dabney totally errs on the side of rationalism. You have two contemporaries who err on either side. But Spurgeon would not even admit people into the pastor's college unless they had preached and people had been converted. Okay? All right, so elements of the call. We basically divide this up into two parts, internal and external. So the internal, first, is just the desire for the work. If anyone desires the office of overseer, he desires a good thing. That's what Paul tells Timothy in 1 Timothy 3, when you have to desire the work. In the language of 1 Peter, you're doing it without compulsion, voluntarily, willingly, right? So so that really is, in some sense, sort of a starting point. Is this a desire of mine? Is it something that that I cannot shake, right? So I'm sure you've heard the oft-repeated axiom, if there's anything else you can do, you should do it, okay? I don't want to say that that's always, you know, the case, but I think that's actually a fairly decent rule of thumb, you know? People sometimes, so I'll go and preach somewhere and they'll do like a little interview. So if you weren't a pastor, I get this, I've heard this question a half a dozen times. If you weren't a pastor, what would you be? Right? That's, I get it. I answer the same way every time. You know what I say? I say, be a sniper. Have you heard that before?
Yeah.
And people are like, oh, okay. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know.
I just want to kill people.
Yeah. No, yes. So this is what Spurgeon says. By the way, Spurgeon lectures to my students as must reading. We must feel that woe unto us if we preach not the gospel. The word of God must be unto us fire in our bones. Otherwise, if we undertake the ministry, we shall be unhappy in it, shall be unable to bear the self-denial incident to it, and shall be of little service to those among whom we minister. Okay. So the desire is that first, that first internal element, and it's not a passing desire. It's not something that you think about once in a while. It's something that is, there's a permanency about it, and there's also a sense of, this is the way that I start to view my life. And I actually had a desire to preach the Word of God at 14 years old. And from 14 onward, I can say that the main thrust of my life revolved around that desire. Everything that I did revolved around that. Now, I'm not saying I didn't sin. Of course, I sinned and I was a rotten kid and all the rest. But there was this unshakable desire that shaped the way that I viewed my life. All right. Next is the fitness for the work. What we mean by that is you have to meet the qualifications of an elder. So what we're going to do in the next two sessions, okay, next month, a month after, is we're going to do qualifications, okay? Because that's actually a natural follow-up to the idea of the call. So here's the thing, is that if you don't meet the qualifications, then you don't have a special call to the ministry. Okay? Then you may have a desire to do it, but by the way, desires can be convoluted things, right? Okay? So you have to be fit for the work. Next, you have to have an experiential faith. Okay? What in the world do I mean by that? Must have an experiential faith. First-hand knowledge, exactly. You will never be effective. By the way, this is just true of your witness as well. you will never be effective if all you are is a second hander. If all you do is preach a gospel that you only know by hearsay. Right? You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Have you ever heard somebody like that? Where it's actually like they are given a second-hand information, and the only truth they know by hearsay. This is the way that John Owen puts it. He says, if the Word does not dwell with power in us, it will not pass with power from us. The lack of this experience of the power of gospel truth on their own souls is that which gives us so many lifeless, sapless orations in words and dead as to power instead of preaching the gospel in the demonstration of the Spirit. Okay? If I'm having someone preach to me about the resurrection of Jesus Christ, I want to know that they know the resurrected Christ. Okay? That's what I mean by an experiential faith. Equipped for the work. You have to have the commensurate gifts. I would classify those. I would put character under qualifications, all right? Because with the exception of apt to teach, all of those are character qualifications. But commensurate abilities would be both mental and verbal. Okay. What would the mental equipment be?
I don't know what you're doing up there for me. I shouldn't.
You can't be mentally handicapped.
That's true.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's true. You can't be mentally handicapped, right? Which
we're working on.
Some people make great strides in overcoming, right, Daniel? So you have to have the mental gifts. Doesn't mean you have to be a genius. You have to have some level of intelligence in order to study and feed the flock. Okay. All right. But you also have to have certain verbal gifts, right?
Speaking no language.
If you are an incurable stutterer, you may take that as a sign that you're not called to preach. In fact, I would say you should take that as a sign that you're not called to preach. Okay? So Spurgeon is excellent on this. A man with a big tongue, which filled up his mouth and caused indistinctness, another without teeth, another who stammered, another who could not pronounce all the alphabet. I have had the pain of declining on the ground that God had not given them those physical appliances, which are, as the prayer book would put it, generally necessary. All right. So I actually love Spurgeon. Spurgeon is so funny. But he's making a point, right? And that is, if you don't have the ability to be able to speak, then you don't have the call to the ministry. Now, that said, I have a very good friend who, growing up, he stuttered all the time. And he believed he was called. And he worked really hard to overcome his stuttering, and he's been in ministry for decades now. So all that to say, there are certain things that can be overcome, but there are times where you have just simply the inability to communicate clearly in public discourse. Okay. And we had a young man who was a wonderful young man, great character, great love for the Lord, great zeal for souls. And the poor guy worked with him and worked with him and worked with him, and he just actually was not a good preacher. And by that I don't mean, oh, he wasn't, you know, he wasn't Eric Alexander or Sinclair Ferguson. What I mean is that he couldn't put together a coherent sermon that edified people. Okay. And he was confusing, and he ended up going into the chaplaincy in the military and was an incredibly effective chaplain. Okay. So you may still serve the Lord, obviously, but if you don't have the verbal gifts to be able to speak in public, if your tongue is too big or your teeth are too few, or you can't pronounce the alphabet. Daniel?
It further would even extend that to, like, lung capacity.
Yeah, yeah. Guys with, he calls that guys with sunken chest.
Yeah.
Right.
People can't hear you, they're not going to be edified.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you'd even push it beyond that and say, like, you can't push and be authoritative at times.
Yeah. 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 Absolutely. All right, real quickly. So the external elements, there must be opportunity to exercise those gifts. Okay. Now, what I want to say about this is really important, especially to anybody who is even remotely thinking about the call, and that is bypassing small opportunities is never a good sign. Okay? Bypassing small opportunities is never a good sign. Because when we talk about the external elements, we're talking about that which is observed. So there was a man, this is no joke, he had graduated from an evangelical seminary. He was in our congregation. And he said, I want to be used. I want to minister. And I said, well, that's great. I said, we actually really need guys that will go in and preach at the prison. Nah, I can't do that. We need Sunday school teachers. I'm not interested in that. Well, what are you interested in? You know what he's interested in? He was interested in preaching on Sunday mornings. Okay. Okay. Let me just say this as bluntly as I can. If you're not interested in teaching sixth grade Sunday school when you have the opportunity, wise elders won't give you a second look. If you're not willing to do what the opportunity, so I would do anything. When I was a teenager, I would do anything. You need a Sunday school teacher? I'll do it. Right? We actually initiated these youth rallies where we would get youth from about a half a dozen different churches. And of course, I am absolutely positive that those sermons that I preached were awful. But they were passionate and awful. And I'd rather have passionate and awful than dispassionate and awful, because that's awful, awful. But you look at the opportunities that you have and you seize those opportunities. Why? Because the call is about serving the Lord, and serving the Lord takes place, you know, so you don't despise the day of small things, right? Okay. And so a guy that feels like he's wasting his time by going into the prison. Yeah. Okay. So you look for opportunities to exercise the gifts, and then there has to be clear recognition of those gifts by judicious leadership and a discerning congregation. you understand how this works. This works in tandem. the leadership and the congregation are working in tandem. If you give a Bible study and a little old lady walks up to you and just says, "That was the best sermon I've ever heard," and everybody else is like, "Yeah, nice job." You don't sit there and just go, "Oh, that was the best sermon they ever heard." Okay, you're always going to have people that are actually way too nice. Seriously. You'll have people that are just way too nice. And it's not that they should stop, right, and say, "You know what, I hope you do better next time." Although, that may be what you need to hear, is, "I hope you do better next time. I hope you study a little harder next time. I hope you're clearer next time." You know, I mean, right? But the leadership starts to recognize gifts, but the congregation starts to recognize gifts. Okay? All right? Now, let me just say a few other quick things, other considerations. So if these things are in place, what do I do next? Sell your house and move away to seminary, of course. Not really. Do I go to seminary? Maybe. Do I get training in my local church? Definitely. Okay. How do I know what field of labor I should aim for? Try them all out. Right. So let's say you actually have a desire to be a missionary and you are engaged in, you know, you're the missions committee and you're this and that. And what might be a way to actually know whether or not this is sort of what the Lord has for me? Well, yeah. Short-term missions actually can be a very good testing ground, right? And so what am I aiming for? And if it's I really think that I should be a pastor, I just want to tell you that you're walking where angels fear to tread. Okay. You will incur stricter judgment. And so you better be sure. Okay. If you want to do it for the money, okay, first of all, you're mentally deficient. Okay. Spurgeon actually makes a hilarious comment. What a poor deluded soul who thinks he's going to be rich from the Baptist ministry. Prestige? Okay, give me a break, really. You know, if you're addicted to stress and depression, maybe. So it's a big thing, right? You don't go into it lightly. What should I aim for? Maybe you just think, you know what? I just want to work with the youth. Well, that may be simply just a manifestation of the general call to serve the Lord. Do it. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might, right? As Kohelet tells us. So if you have that opportunity, just do it. Serve hard. And a lot of times it's just in those sort of natural settings that the Lord starts to work. Should I wait on the Lord? And the answer is, of course. Okay. Yeah, of course. So John Newton says, "If it be the Lord's will to bring you into his ministry, he's already appointed your place and service, and though you know it not at present, you shall at a proper time." Okay. So David had to wait, and he was willing to wait on the Lord. Right? Okay. Any questions about the call? Anything that we brought up? What do you think the dangers are of an uncalled ministry? What's that?
I said waste of talent.
Okay.
Like a Christless ministry.
Okay.
Fruitless.
He
that is not with me is against me.
Okay.
He could also be like diverting the flock. He's somebody who's bringing them away. It's dangerous to be in that position.
Yeah.
Definitely calling judgment upon yourself.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's the biggest danger to yourself, of course, is entering into something, you know. So Jeremiah says to Baruch in Jeremiah 45, you seek great things for yourself, don't seek those things. Right? There is always a danger of an uncalled ministry, but I want to think about the danger to the sheep that they serve. Okay? Yeah. Yeah, an uncalled ministry is in a sense a blight on the church. And it's interesting. We've had a sense of this in times past. So the Tenet brothers, Gilbert and William, started the Log College, which is now Princeton. Gilbert Tenet preached. Remember, in those days, taxes were collected that paid the minister's salary. Okay? This is even in the colonies. Gilbert Tenet preached the dangers of an unconverted ministry, okay, which made him incredibly popular among the clergy in New England, right? But that, of course, is just one of the things that we need to beware of. People will wither on the vine under an uncalled ministry. Okay. All right. Anything else?
Bum, bum. Bum, bum.
So, on that note, Brian, there's, you know, a two-part answer to that question. An unconverted person that believes they call, but then a God-fearing man that doesn't have the call, that just has the desire, or appears to have the desire, maybe not the gifting.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, you know, there's going to be difficulties.
Yeah.
You know, the church won't grow, or the ministry won't be effective.
Right.
At some point, it'll fail.
Yeah, yeah. And I think as far as the impact on the man himself, there is something about a genuine call that keeps a person in ministry. Okay. Daniel can tell you. You get a really long email on Sunday night from an esteemed person in the congregation that does nothing but just knock you down, right? If you don't have a sense of calling, you are going to be tempted over and over and over again to throw in the towel. Sometimes the sense of a special call to the ministry is the only thing that keeps you serving the Lord in ministry, right? So there's a staying power to it, okay? So yeah, people have asked me, have you ever thought of quitting? And I'm like, no. So you've had it pretty easy, huh? Oh, yeah. No. But, like, if you're, okay, this is what God made me. Right? This is what God made me. And if I don't do this, I'll die. So I can't quit. Right?
We hope that you were edified by this message. For additional sermons as well as information on giving to the ministry of Grace Community Church, please visit us online at gracenevada.com. That's gracenevada.com.